Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
Coming up on show 862, it's a Saturday special talking about Lyft's electric future. Stick around, you'll enjoy this one. Well, welcome along to a Saturday special interview. Today I'm talking to Sam Ahrens. He is the Director of Sustainability at the ride-sharing company Lyft. Now, I asked about their plan to go to 100% electric vehicles on the Lyft platform by 2030. It's a big ambition they have. In 10 years, well, that will fly by before you know it. I ask how Lyft is going to help get their drivers into EVs. Like it or not, at the minute, EVs are a little more expensive than their equivalent combustion cars. So what can a company do and who can they work with to help get drivers who work on that platform a better deal? And why they think they can be a trailblazer for other rideshare and delivery companies to follow. Enjoy the show today. EV News Daily with a Saturday special interview. Delighted to be joined today by Sam Ahrens. Sam is Director of Sustainability for Lyft. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's good to have you. Now, we're a global podcast, and so I could just say that you are a ride-sharing company to explain it, but that probably does you a little disservice. So can I just begin with a very simple introduction for people listening in countries where you don't operate? What's Lyft all about?
Lyft is a technology platform that connects people wanting to go from point A to point B with modes of transportation to get there. We started out as actually the first peer-to-peer ride-sharing company. We're based in San Francisco, California, and we currently operate in the US and in Canada. And we have recently, or not that recently, actually expanded into other modes of transportation as well. So now we offer bikes and scooters. We're the largest operator of bike share, for example, in North America. And we also now have integrated transit into our app as well. So people can basically come to us as a one-stop shop if you're trying to get from point A to point B and figure out, you know, all the different ways you can do that and figure out what, you know, for you, what is the best in terms of the cost and the time and making those trade-offs. And we help you to figure that out.
Do you think people listening might be surprised that a company like Lyft has a job role called Director of Sustainability?
I hope not. I think it's important.
Yeah, no, I agree it's important, but maybe people wouldn't think that that role is needed. So what does your day-to-day job look like? And then over the long term, what do you work on?
Yeah, great question. So the reason why this role is so important at Lyft is because really getting back to the founding vision of why our founders, John and Logan, created Lyft in the first place, one of the reasons is because of the inefficiencies that exist in the transportation ecosystem today. If you look at personal car ownership, and Logan, one of our co-founders, grew up in Los Angeles and kind of lived the sort of day in and day out gridlock there and kind of thought, hey, there's got to be a better way. When it comes right down to it, you know, personally owned cars are only used about 5% of the time. The other 95, 96% of the time, they're parked. So in a way, you can think of our cars as parking machines rather than driving machines. And they're basically just taking up vast amounts of space. So we're giving over a lot of the space in our cities to parked cars that we could better be using for sidewalk, you know, street life and restaurants. And well, I suppose once the pandemic is over, we can get back to those things. But really, it was part of the founding vision of Lyft that we could make a difference both in terms of helping people to get around in a more efficient way and also kind of try to take some of that space back from cars and give it back to people. And so following on from that, if you now look at what is the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in the US and in many other places, it's now the top one or top two sources of emissions that are contributing to climate change. And so as a company that connects people with drivers who for now are mostly driving around gasoline powered cars, we are just a small percentage, but we're also contributing to the problem. And so we want to step up and do our part and help to mitigate those climate emissions that we're helping to create so that we can blaze a trail for others and really start to make a dent in greenhouse gas emissions that can help us solve climate change.
I'll probably ask the next question fully aware that it is a massive, impossibly hard challenge for you and the team, and yet very flippant for me to ask. I'll try and sum it up in one question. When will all your cars be electric?
That's a great question, and I guess I would have to say by December 31st, 2030, because that is the commitment that we have made. So for the listeners who may not have heard yet, back in June of this year, we announced a big new commitment to 100% electric vehicles on our platform by 2030, and that covers all cars that are driving on the platform. So it's those that are brought to the platform by drivers individually, which today is the majority of the cars. It also includes our consumer rentals program, which is for people who, you know, want to rent a car to, you know, to go shopping or whatever they might be doing. It's for our express drive rental program, which is for people who want to do rideshare driving but don't have their own car. And eventually, it will also cover our autonomous vehicle program as well. We've made that commitment, and I guess that means that we're going to try to do it by that date, I suppose.
Yeah, because without a target, you don't know what to aim for. You know, it's a kind of, this month is the anniversary of us having our car exactly 12 months, and it had done a couple of miles when we bought it new. So I know that my annual mileage this year has been 7,000 miles because it's literally to the day since we bought our car. But how many, which I always think people overestimate how many miles they do. I'd have said maybe 10, 12, 15,000. It's seven. And, you know, we've done a fair bit of driving. How many miles, and maybe there's not one answer to this question, but would an average working vehicle do in a year?
Yeah, that's a great question. And in fact, the number is much, much higher. So, you know, typically we sort of assume that on average, like a personally owned car, like your car would drive, you know, 10,000 miles per year. Maybe if you really, really drive a lot, 12,000 miles per year. And 7,000 is right in line with that. Rideshare vehicles can do upwards of 30, in some cases even 40 or 50,000 miles per year. So we're really talking about huge amounts of mileage. And actually, that's why it makes the most sense to electrify rideshare vehicles first as sort of the tip of the spear, because the upfront cost of acquiring an electric vehicle today is still higher than if you're going to buy a gasoline vehicle, but you get savings over time, right? Because every mile you drive it, you're paying less in fuel costs, you're paying less in maintenance costs. That's the beauty of electric vehicles, right? The more miles you're driving per year, the faster those savings will accrue and the more quickly you can pay back that upfront cost. So that means put electric vehicles first into high mileage applications like ride sharing and other, you know, delivery services, and let those industries go first. They will help to increase the demand for EVs, which in turn will help to increase the supply of EVs, which will then help to decrease the cost of EVs and let everybody else electrify in turn.
Yeah, it's a much better use of the resources that we have on the planet, where if a car sits there outside your house all day not being used, think about if, you know, if a business has a vehicle that isn't moving, it could either be because the driver is on a mandated, you know, health break or a health stop, or many vehicles will do two or three shifts in a day, and therefore, literally, if the vehicle isn't moving, it's not earning money. And so that's why I'm so excited about, you know, commercial vehicles and buses, mass transit, ride sharing. One of the big challenges for anyone when they think about EVs, and I don't think in reality it's a big challenge, because we have off-road parking. 60% of the UK has off-road parking. In the US, it could well be higher because, you know, you have a bit more space. People worry about charging a lot. I don't think charging at home is an issue for most people. Electricity is everywhere. But a working vehicle needs to recharge quickly and also conveniently. So what are your thoughts on recharging those cars?
Well, that's going to be crucial. I think there's really two barriers to rideshare adoption right now of EVs. One is the upfront cost, which we've talked about a little bit already. And we're actually, just as a side note, doing a bunch of policy work to try to expand incentive programs and access to existing incentive programs for our drivers and for the rental program that we operate so that we can help to address that barrier. But the second barrier, you're absolutely right, is the charging. And so even if you could wave a magic wand and you could sort of get, you know, every vehicle to be electric tomorrow, in many cases, drivers would still not have a great experience because of all the reasons you mentioned. You've got to keep that vehicle moving. Sure, there are natural breakpoints during the day, like if you're going to, you know, take a bio break or have lunch or something, but you want to, you know, charge as quickly as you can. So I think there's really two ways to get at that. One is through, we need much more, you know, ubiquitous and reliable and affordable fast charging. And I'm talking about DCFC, direct current fast charging, which is typically upwards of 50 kilowatts, could be even higher, up to 150 or more kilowatts. There just simply aren't many of those chargers around right now. And sometimes the ones that are around may be broken, or there might be a queue and you have to just sit there not earning money while you're waiting to charge, which is not a good situation to be in. So we need lots and lots more of that. And I think that that can be built both by private charging companies and by public utilities and local governments as well. So I think we need to kind of all come together and really expand this ecosystem. The second thing that's important, though, is to think about overnight charging. It's so-called L2 or level 2 charging. And the reason why that's important is because of something, and we're going to get really wonky here, so get ready, something called demand charges, which utilities will bill to electricity consumers. And basically what that means is if you're drawing power at a very high rate, right? So if you're doing, basically, if you're doing fast charging, there's sort of an additional cost that's tacked onto your electricity bill because you have stressed the electrical system by sort of sucking a ton of electricity all at once. And so for that reason, actually fast charging tends to be more expensive than sort of slower charging. And so we don't want to ignore the fact that home charging, overnight charging, which can avoid some of these so-called demand charges, is actually a much more cost-effective way to charge if you can get that charging to the people who need it in the places they need it, meaning their homes or somewhere nearby their homes. And when you look at the demographics of rideshare drivers, many rideshare drivers, not all, but many, live in multi-unit dwellings, apartment buildings and the like, and they don't have their own parking space. Or if they do, you know, it's really not their decision. It's the landlord or the building owner's decision whether to install a charger. So what that means is we need to be somewhat creative here in kind of finding the right combination of a willing local government, a willing local utility, a willing landlord, and a willing driver who all want to kind of come together and pilot this and sort of figure out how do we get some of these chargers installed and let people charge overnight, because then A, it's cheaper. B, you start the day with a full charge. You might not even need to charge during the day. You can avoid this whole problem of finding a fast charger when and where you need it. So that could be a win-win as well. So we're actually going to be attacking this from both of those angles, getting more fast charging and trying to pilot some programs to get overnight L2 charging.
It's something that I say to people all the time before they buy an electric car. And it's something that I knew intellectually before I got one. And then when I finally became an EV driver, I felt it. Like, it's a great feeling waking up in the morning and the car is full. It's just, it's awesome. Like, you know it. But then that first time it happens, in fact, every time it happens, it's just cool. One of the things we talk about a lot on the show is not being one size fits all. Maybe the answer isn't cars, but what about personal electric mobility? How do you feel about things like e-scooters and e-bikes? Because, you know, we've all seen those kind of memes online and those kind of Twitter things that go around when you say this is the space it takes for 100 people on the road in a car, but put them on a bus or a ride sharing or a bike and look at the space. Where do you stand on things like those personal mobility solutions?
Those are extremely important as well. We sometimes refer to that as micro mobility. But I think it's pretty clear that, you know, the most efficient way to move large amounts of people around in the most carbon effective way is first on mass transit and then on bikes and scooters and only then in cars. And first it's shared rides and then it's, you know, single occupancy rides. So there's kind of a hierarchy here of kind of the best thing for the climate, the best thing for the environment. And we are now operating in all those spaces. It's maybe weird for people to think about it. Like, Lyft started as sort of a car only company. We now are truly a multimodal transportation company. And we are leading with micromobility because we want to help people get to where they want to go in the way that's best for them. So, you know, if you think about it, in some ways, we have to sort of disrupt ourselves before somebody else disrupts us. And that's what we've done. We've acquired a company called Motivate, which was the largest bike share operator in the US. Now Lyft is the largest bike share operator in the US. And that's because we want to help, you know, nudge people onto modes that are, I mean, look, there's so many benefits, right? If it's a nice day, you get some fresh air, you might get some exercise, you might get there faster because you can sort of go around the traffic in the bike lane instead of sitting in the traffic. And it costs less. So like, why wouldn't you want to take that mode of transportation? It's fantastic. So anyway, the short answer is yes, that's absolutely what we want to do. And you're right.
A quick mention as well for the benefits of electric cars in terms of the drivers as well. Like, you know, until you actually spend time driving an EV, you don't realize actually it's more relaxing. There's less noise. There's no vibration. They're single gear. You're not constantly either shifting up manually or experiencing it. So for your drivers as well, it actually makes for a better work day. Even a more relaxing place to be, a nicer place to spend your day.
And, you know, the cool thing about it too, is that drivers get to kind of be EV ambassadors as well, right? You know, so if you personally have bought an EV, you might give a ride to a friend once in a while. So you're having sort of your multiplier effect is pretty low. A rideshare driver driving an EV might give, you know, thousands or maybe in some cases, even tens of thousands of rides in a year. And suddenly now you have the biggest EV ride and drive event that we've ever seen in history, right? So we can also kind of expand the circle of those who are being exposed to the technology and seeing it and seeing that it is viable, that it works, that it is a better experience, that it's more fun, that it performs well. And so I think that that can have sort of these really outsized multiplier effects in terms of EV adoption in a more widespread way.
Let's talk a little bit about clean air and that it's something that everybody wants to... Everyone agrees that they want to do it, but maybe they don't know how to do it. So if they opened up, and sadly, I can't get Lyft here, and I can't wait till we can. If people open up the app, is there an option at the moment for them to select, I want an EV ride? And if not now, could you do that in the future so that at least they can play their part and feel good about that choice they made in the moment?
Yes. So we have actually piloted something called, we call Green Mode, in Seattle and in Portland, Oregon. So, you know, two U.S. cities in the Pacific Northwest region. These cities have had Green Mode now for about a year, a little more. And we're still considering it a pilot. So we're learning and we're seeing, you know, what is the adoption? Do people like it? Are they tipping more, for example, when they take a ride? Are they willing to have a slightly longer ETA, right? Because there are, unfortunately, there are still not enough EVs on the road, so you may have to wait a little bit longer to get your driver to show up than if you take a gasoline car. But what we're seeing is, by and large, the people who are using Green Mode are having a good experience. Drivers are seeing a little bit, perhaps, of a bump in their tipping. It's working pretty well. So we're continually kind of evaluating when and where we may be able to expand this. We would like to pair it with launching more EVs, so it's partly dependent on where we can, you know, figure out the right policy incentives and figure out the right deals with automakers to bring EVs into new markets. But I can say that we are definitely looking towards hopefully expanding this further in the future.
And everyone looks at the bottom line, and it's easier for companies that work on a 2 or 3 year lease or they'll look at the ROI of an investment or the cost of running a vehicle. And that's easier if you're a fleet manager and you're buying 100,000 cars at a time. But an individual who's buying a car, as you said at the beginning of the podcast, EVs are still, I think I can say this because there are some good offers out there at the moment, but generally EVs are more expensive to buy at the outset. What can, and not just Lyft, but what can companies, and from someone like yourself who deals with things like policy and the kind of the high level things, you know, what can be done? How can companies help get those vehicles onto the road when, you know, without asking individuals, you've got to stump up all of the outlay at the beginning?
Yeah, that's the $1 million or perhaps even $1 billion question. So let me give an example. In the state of Colorado in the US last year, we were able to work with the governor and the state legislature to say, okay, let's think about this. The state has a tax credit for electric vehicles. And at that time, it was only available to private individuals like you and me, but it was not available to any commercial entities or any rental programs or anything like that. And so we sort of made the argument that, like, well, hey, you know, if you allow a high mileage commercial application like a rideshare vehicle to access this incentive, for every dollar that the state is going to spend to get an EV on the road, it'll achieve 3 to 5 times the emission reductions because of the 3 to 5 times higher annual mileage of that rideshare EV versus a personal EV. And that was a pretty compelling argument. And the governor and the legislature said, hey, yeah, duh, we should totally open up this program to rideshare rental fleets. And boom, within 4 or 5 months of that law passing, we were able to launch the biggest EV deployment in Colorado's history, with 200 vehicles now on the streets of Denver today. So I think that's a really great example of what can happen when the public sector and the private sector come together and look at the sort of overlapping portion of that Venn diagram to say, what is the state trying to do? It's trying to meet clean air goals. It's trying to meet climate goals. What are we trying to do? We're trying to have a better experience for drivers. We're trying to have a better experience for riders who by the way, you know, increasingly are looking for socially responsible companies. How can we do this together? And so this is a great example. Let's take an existing incentive program. It doesn't require any more budget allocation. You know, in a world of COVID, that budget is hard to come by right now. So there's no more budget required. It's just allowing, you know, a broader array of entities to access this existing program. And I think we can replicate that in other places, and that will allow us to really move much more rapidly to deploy EVs.
It's exciting times for you and the team at Lyft. You've recently been working on a big research project recently, I heard, a big kind of data gathering. Can you share any more on that?
We just published our first ever ESG report, which stands for Environmental, Social, and Governance Report. And this is, in a way, a sort of a thing that companies that are serious about their social programs and their environmental impact will do. Now that we're a public company, we went public last year, we said it's time to step up and publish our first report. So it's out now. You can find it. There's a blog post about it and then a link to the actual report itself. And we go into a lot of detail about all of our programs, helping the communities that we work in, all the things we're doing to help improve the environment. We actually have published our carbon footprint publicly for the first time. So you can go and see the breakdown of where the emissions are coming from. And, you know, spoiler alert, it's mostly coming from the rides, which just shouldn't surprise anybody. But that really helps us focus on what are the places that we can have the most impact, hence why we have this new electric vehicle goal, because, you know, knowing that that's where the impact is coming from, we can say, okay, well, if we focus on the vehicles and we focus on the rides, then we can actually mitigate all these emissions.
Amazing. Well, Sam, thank you so much. If people want to find out more about Lyft, is there obviously there's the, you know, the main website. Is there a sustainability part of that that you want to point people towards, or maybe just even you on LinkedIn or Twitter that people can see what, you know, your thoughts on certain things?
Definitely. Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn. Twitter is at Smasmonium, which is a bit of a mouthful.
But we'll put a link in the show notes so people can find you.
Great. And yes, absolutely. On the Lyft website, there's actually a sort of a complimentary website called LyftImpact.com, where we actually publish a whole host of statistics on our driver population, our rider population, economic benefits of the platform, and our environmental program. So I would actually point people to that website.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time today, and all the best with the big plan.
Thank you so much, Martin. It's great to chat with you.
Well, thank you for listening today. There are 861 previous shows in the archive for free, wherever you get your podcasts from, whether that's a podcast app, on your phone, your tablet, on your desktop, Apple, Google, Spotify, even the audio goes on YouTube. And I would love for you to feedback on any of the shows, particularly the interviews that we do at the weekends. The address is hello@evnewsdaily.com. If you have a follow-up question or a point that you'd like to make, just email me or leave a comment on the YouTube audio show and I can read that out for you. Well, if you can share this podcast, I'd love you to do that. It really helps me build the show and reach new people. Thank you to our premium partners via Patreon, which is how we make this program, and it's how it's funded, and it's why there's no adverts in it. Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Avid Technology, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, nationalcarcharging.com and alohacharge.com, and Derek Riley from the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel. Have a wonderful day. Catch you Monday for a brand new week. Oh, and do remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.